proper way amongst countrymen.
She winked at him and returned to her normal way of speaking.
It's for the lesser-born, really. My grandpapa is quiet because he was raised in the north, and his accent comes out more often. He trained me to speak like the court. I like hearing it, though. It's musical.
Berwick's always complaining, Owen mumbled.
Everyone complains, she said, waving her hand. Have you had any other dreams, Owen? About us?
The hopeful look in her eye made the guilt twist more deeply. He blushed and stared down at the tiles he was arranging.
I don't control it, he said limply.
If you had a dream about me going into the river, you must tell me, she said eagerly. You know, some people have to be bound up because they're so frightened. I wouldn't want that. If I were condemned to die over the falls, I would want to paddle. Think of how it would feel. We'd go down together, you and I. Maybe we could hold hands from across our canoes. Papa said the people who survive point their toes down and keep as straight as a stick. Most of them die, though. I thought it would be fun to go over the falls with a big rope and have someone pull me up again from the bridge, but Papa said the falls would be too hard to pull against, and I'd be dashed to pieces.
She had a dreamy look in her eye as she contemplated her death over the falls. He dropped his voice lower.
Don't you think it's awful, though, that the king tries to trick people into being loyal to him?
She gave him a curious look.
That's just gossip, Owen. The king wouldn't do that.
I think he does,
Owen said, growing more uncomfortable. He wanted so much to tell her about Anchorette. She shook her head.
I'll ask Grandpapa.
Owen frowned.
What if it's true?
She shrugged, unconcerned.
Then I'll tell the king he must stop it.
And Owen did not doubt for a moment that she would. When the castle was finally dark and fast asleep, Owen slipped out of his room to visit Anchorette. He was eager to see her again, and he hoped to get her permission to share at least part of his secret with Evie. He walked on cat's feet down the dark corridor and tripped the latch to enter one of the secret doors of the palace. He started down the corridor without a candle, for he knew the way even in the dark. When he reached the tower steps, he halted in his tracks and his heart started to hammer with fear. There were men's voices coming from Anchorette's room. Slowly, he crept up the stairwell. His body tense and low to the ground, he was ready to flee at a moment's warning. Had Ratcliffe discovered her hiding place at last? No, it wasn't his voice. As he drew closer, he heard Anchorette.
It is as simple as that, Dominic. I want the boy to survive, and I need your help. Give me another bit of news, something not even Ratcliffe knows. Nothing pivotal, nothing that will harm you. But something that will lend credibility to the rumor that Owen is fountain-blessed.
You are asking me, Mancini growled, to risk my life trusting your word.
What she is asking,
came a third voice, and Owen recognized it immediately as the butler Berwick.
Is that you stop eating in the kitchen and actually do what Ratcliffe pays you to do? Look at your flesh, man. You are literally eating yourself to death.
Anchorette's voice interrupted.
Patience, Berwick. You cannot coax a man beyond his willingness to suffer. If our friend wants to meet his end through his stomach, I have sympathy for that. We should not condemn him.
He's increased the household costs of the palace fourfold,
Berwick complained.
It's a trifle, Anchorette soothed. When he becomes the head of the Espeon, it will no longer matter.
That is still your plan?
Mancini demanded in a wary voice.
I may be fat, I may be lazy, but I am not often called a fool. When the boy spouted off about pine cones, you can trust every espion in the palace began pointing fingers at each other. I was actually startled enough that my defense seemed plausible. I didn't tell the boy anything.
Nor will you, Anchorette said placatingly. You will tell me, and I will tell him, and in such a way that it cannot possibly come back and hurt you. in such a way that it will ultimately benefit you.
Owen heard the scratching sound of fingernails against whiskers.
I cannot believe I've been duped this easily. My pride is wounded. Your liver is wounded,
Berwick taunted.
This woman is the queen's poisoner. She's the wiliest person in the kingdom. Fountain blessed herself. I owe quite a bit to her, and I have kept Fulke from wandering up these steps for years. When she gives her word, she means it. No one means it,
Mancini grumbled.
Trust is an eggshell. Bah, I'm going to get myself killed. If I could run away, I would. My legs would protest, unfortunately. Still he complains,
Berwick muttered darkly.
Finish him now, lass. A little drink of that black vial would rid you of him. That's supposed to inspire my confidence,
Mancini wailed.
You must pardon Berwick, Anchorette said. He is loyal. I've kept his secret for years, and he's been rewarded for turning a blind eye to my movements. I've helped him, just as I've offered to help you. Now, repeat again what we need from you.
My unflinching courage,
Mancini snapped.
Gah! He's tiresome,
Berwick complained.
Let him speak, Anchorette soothed.
I need to provide you with some news that is going to reach the king through Ratcliffe, but the king must hear it from the boy first, so the tiding must hearken to something slightly less interesting than treason, but more important than the rising cost of butter and treacle in the palace kitchen. Something short and easy to remember, something that will make the boy look more mystical.
He sighed wearily.
I'm going to regret this. I'm already regretting this. Why did you make me come up all these steps? Maybe you thought to kill me by exercise.
No, Dominic, Anchorette said. It's to show that I trust you. This is a delicate dance. You trust no one. But I promise you, when this is done, the king will value you so much that he will name you head of the Espion, and you'll be worthy of the post. I haven't forgotten my promise to teach you my history, how I came to live in this tower. But that will be another night. Go find us your news, Dominic. Give it to Berwick, who can reach me faster.
There was a deep, troubled sigh.
Very well, my lady. Is it true that you were hung from a gibbet? That is the legend, anyway. That you survived?
It wasn't a gibbet, she answered softly. It was a waterfall.
It is a dangerous thing to try and grasp a snake by the tail. If you are not fast enough, it will bite you. If you are too fast, you will kill it. If it is dead, you cannot harvest its venom or use it to frighten someone else. I wish I were 10 years younger. My hands are trembling.
Dominic Mancini, Espion of the Palace Kitchen.
Chapter 23.
Wiser. There was a little space beneath the stone steps of the tower where Owen hid himself as Mancini and Berwick descended from Anchorette's room. He was as quiet as a mouse, listening to their conversation as they passed. Mancini was winded from the descent, but he was bubbling with queries and intrigue like a stewpot.
"And how did she lull you into service?"
Mancini wheedled.
I never would have guessed you were part of her ring.
Berwick's reply was thick with sarcasm.
Isn't that the point? No, I'll be thrushed, man. She's a cunning one, but caring too. Hooked me like a fish in my heart pulp. Me daughter's womb was thick with twin bairns. The birthing was like more than not to kill her and the babes. Anchorette is a midwife. Not only does she knew all the poisons, but she also knows all the remedies of fever few and hypericum. She helped my lass, and the twins survived. She did it without me begging. She only said she might need a favor, and she did, and she does, and so I am loyal to her more than the king. Because the king would have shrugged and let them all die. But the king's brother was king back then, and he cared about a butler and his family. He told his wife and she told her poisoner, and so help came. I thank her for it.
But she's using you, man. Surely you see that.
Mancini's voice was low but sharp.
Aye, but instead of years of grief, she's given me years of glee. That's worth something to a man with gray hairs like me. Spying and sneaking is not about coins. Coins can be stolen. They can be lost. But good memories. Aye, they be the stuffings in the pie.
That made no sense to me.
Mancini grumbled.
I'm surprised it did not, considering your girth.
Berwick teased.
My girth and I are boon companions, thank you. I eat so that I don't have to remember. The past is pain and best forgotten. Tomorrow is a day that may never see the sun. There is only now.
I'm hungry, Berwick. I'm going to the kitchen.
You do that,
Berwick said with a laugh, and Owen heard the sound of a hand clapping against a back. The two ambled off down a side tunnel, their voices growing distant. The boy scampered up the stairs again. When he entered the tower room, Anchorette was leaning against a table, gripping its edge with one hand and holding her stomach as if she might vomit with the other. Sweat trickled down her cheek, and she breathed in and out quickly. Owen shrank with worry. Some of her hair had straggled down from its braided nest, and when she turned her gaze on him, he could see the suffering in her eyes. A tender smile twitched on her mouth.
"Hello, Owen," she said, lips tight with suppressed pain. "Our little plan worked, so far. Tell me how it went."
She took a hesitant step toward her bed, looking almost like a puppet dangling on strings. Owen walked up and reached for her hand, but she rested it on his shoulder instead. She leaned her weight against him, but it was not burdensome.
"Thank you,"
she whispered, using Owen as a crutch as she hobbled to her bedside. Once they reached the bed, she seated herself delicately on the edge and folded her hands in her lap. She blinked a few times, and then her face looked peaceful and serene. She looked like herself again, pretty and gentle and caring. But his heart cringed in pain at the evidence he'd seen of her suffering.
"Are you very sick?"
he asked.
"I am a little tired tonight," she said dismissively. "That is all. Tell me about what happened. The palace was buzzing like a beehive today."
Owen quickly related what he had done and how he had summoned the courage to tell the king about his dream. She listened attentively, waiting for him to finish the story before asking questions.
"How did Ratcliffe look?"
she pressed.
"He looked frightened, like he was scared of me."
"He's not scared of you, Owen," she said. "He's scared for himself. His first fear is that someone in the Espeon has betrayed him, which is what has happened. He will seek to discover who it is, but I don't think we'll have any trouble outmaneuvering him.
What about the king? How did he look?"
"Almost pleased," Owen answered. "He seemed to like me for the first time."
Anchorette nodded with satisfaction.
"It is rare for a young boy to demonstrate aptitude with the fountain. It bodes well for the king if he is able to find people who are fountain-blessed to serve him. This is what I suspect will happen next. Ratcliffe will keep you on a shorter leash. He'll start leaking information to different spies to see if your next dream reveals it. Then he'll know which Espeon betrayed him. That's what most people without vision would do. What you will reveal in your next dream is something Ratcliffe doesn't even know yet."
She grinned playfully.
"It may take several attempts for us to win the king's trust completely. Do you understand now what the dream meant?"
Owen was amazed at her level of thinking. He would never have been able to come up with such an idea on his own.
"I think so. Lord Asilomar's badge was the clue."
She nodded affectionately and reached out and took his hand.
"I need rest, Owen. Mancini will help us with the next clue."
"I know," Owen said shyly. "I heard him from the hall."
"I'm glad you did," she answered with a wink. You were clever to stay hidden. The next clue will be tricky because it may not come in the night. You must be ready to act quickly. Like before, you won't know what it means. Just trust the words I tell you. Each is chosen deliberately. There may be many more deaths in the near future. The king defeated his enemies at Ambion Hill, but he is still unsure of his throne. He now has absolute power in the realm, and his enemies at home are quaking with fear that what happened to Lord Asilomar is just the beginning.
I wanted to ask you something, Owen said. I want to tell Evie about our secret.
He bit his lip, looking at her worriedly.
I think she would help us. The only reason I had enough courage to speak to the king was because she was with me.
Ankara's expression hardened. It was almost imperceptible, but Owen knew her well enough to notice the tightening around her eyes and the little dip in her smile.
I see, she said softly,
then looked down at her hands, which still held his. Owen could tell she was thinking very hard, very quickly. After a long pause, she squeezed his hand lightly and peered into his eyes.
It is difficult for you, for anyone, to keep a secret, she said in a very serious tone.
Then she released his hand and tapped her own heart with her fingers.
A secret squirms inside of us, like a chick wanting to be free of its egg, or a moth quivering inside a cocoon. Secrets want to be told, don't they?
He stared at her, not sure if she was pleased with him or not. Her serious manner made him fear he had made a mistake.
Yes,
he agreed, because he did want to tell Evie. Especially considering the way she had reacted to his dream, it felt dishonest keeping it from her. She reached and put her hand on his shoulder.
You want to tell her because you feel a sense of loyalty toward her. She is your friend, your playmate. She is pretty and she is kind. You two share confidences. But remember the nature of secrets, Owen. If you share yours, it will stop wriggling inside your chest, and it will start wriggling inside hers. Secrets always want to come out. She feels loyalty to you. That is clear. But is her loyalty to you greater than her loyalty to her grandfather?
She raised her eyebrows.
Who has she known longer? Who has shown her more love and devotion?
She sighed deeply and dropped her hand back into her lap. Then she looked at him with her luminous eyes, her gaze imploring.
When you share a secret, Owen, you take a great risk. I am who I am. I became who I am. Because I don't share secrets very easily. I make sure I can trust someone fully before I do. I have trusted Mancini with only a portion of my plan. The same with Berwick. I need to tell them things in order to accomplish my goal. But either one of them could betray us. Before you share the truth with Lady Mortimer, I need to know if I can trust her. That means I must meet her and look her in the eyes. I must discern her. That is a risk, of course. But I am willing to take it if it will help you have courage.
Owen nodded firmly, understanding what she meant.
I trust you, Ankaret Trinawi, he said. I also trust her. I think she's like us.
Then watch for me in the kitchen,
Ankaret said, stroking the white patch of hair above Owen's ear. The next morning in the Great Hall, Owen found that his world had changed overnight. When he and Evie walked into the room, he noticed that attendance in the hall had increased dramatically. There were noble families there who had never attended the king's breakfasts before. Fathers and mothers with children clustering around their legs. Hushing noises heralded his entrance, and people eyed him with open curiosity and interest. Additional food had been gathered to the trestle tables. huge trays of fried bacon, muffins, breads and cheeses, vines of grapes, and green pears. The commotion subsided for only a moment, and then people began talking again, wondering aloud if the lad had had any more dreams. Owen had predicted the fall of House Asilomar. People wanted to know if another family would be named.
"They are like carrion birds,"
Evie whispered disdainfully in his ear.
"They want to peck at the lands and farms that will be left behind if other traders are named. Where were they all before?"
The rumble of voices quieted when the king entered, with Lord Horwath at his side holding a wooden crate in his arms.
"I wonder what that is,"
Evie said curiously, nudging Owen's ribs. The king slowed when he saw the multitude in attendance. He cast his gaze around the crowd, looking perplexed, but then understanding seemed to dawn on his face.
"Ah," he said in a loud, strong voice. "My meals have suddenly become very popular. Well, I cannot give credit to the excellent cooking, which has gone unchanged for years. I cannot give credit to myself, because I am, as you all know, a rough soldier and not a gallant with fine plumes in my cap. Black suits me best, I think. No, you are not here for the tasty treats. You are here because of a little boy."
He sneered at them, his expression full of disdain.
"Thank you all, my lords and ladies, for gracing us with your presence this morning. I will not send you all away, although I am tempted. The palace has ever been a place to assemble and gather. Eat. Do not let this mountain of a meal go to waste. Eat, and may your guts sicken of it before mine does."
He waved his hand in a sweeping gesture, granting those in attendance permission to begin the meal. The children sprang from their parents' legs and quickly mobbed the table, which seemed funny to Owen, especially since he knew the king was not the only one who feared the morning feast might be poisoned. The king quickly picked out his meal, joining the melee of children. He chuckled to himself as one of the tables was almost overturned by the crowd.
"Hold there, Bowen. There is enough for all. If the table breaks, my hounds will snarl and snap at the food, too. You are all a bunch of greedy hounds. Why, Lady Marple, do you hesitate to join the feast? You let your son gorge himself quickly enough. Lord Tanner, a pleasure, truly. Why, I do not think you have darkened this hall since my coronation. Why so solemn, sir? What has changed?"
The king seemed to take a perverse delight in tormenting everyone. As he flung his barbs and jests around the hall, Owen could hear the faint trickling sound of water, as if a cup were being filled. The king's elation only grew with the increased number in attendance. His eyes were almost feverish with delight as he made his way through the crowd. His tongue was like the knife at his belt, always sharp and always sudden, ready to strike at any opportunity. Owen grabbed some food himself, feeling uncomfortable with the knowledge that Anchorette's scheme, and his part in it, had prompted the change.
"Well, my little Lord Kiskaden,"
the king suddenly said, calling attention to Owen in front of all the gathered feasters.
"Look what you have done. I am sure many came here to see if you had another dream last night. But that could not have happened, or else you would have fetched me right away. But please, put these miserable creatures out of their discomfort."
Owen shook his head, and he could see the looks of disappointment, the crestfallen glances. Parents began summoning their children to them, scolding them for indulging in the feast. Many began to retreat from the room. The king ridiculed them.
"How quick you are to leave, Lord Bascom! Lady Tress, please don't snap a garter in your haste to flee. There are crumbs left on the plate still." "Look at them," he said in an undertone, mockingly. "Look how they run."
Then he glanced back at Owen and snapped his fingers, so suddenly and so loud that Owen flinched. The commotion in the hall quelled in an instant.
Lord Horwath, if you would,
the king said dramatically. Some of those who were fleeing halted, seemingly intrigued by his announcement. The king folded his arms imperiously, his look contented and smug. Although his shoulders were crooked, the way his arms were folded made him look regal, impressive. Lord Horwath approached Owen with the wooden box. He dropped to one knee in front of his granddaughter and Owen, and set the box down on his angled leg. Then, with a weather-beaten hand, he lifted the top of the wooden box.
Oh!
Evie cooed with delight. It was a Wiser set, the most beautiful one Owen had ever seen. The tiles were violet and white, like anchorets made of stone. The gleaming pieces were carved and polished out of matching colors, resting in little felt nooks along the edges of the box. Owen stared at it breathlessly.
I promised you a Wiser set, the king said with a twist in his voice. I ordered this to be made, and it recently arrived from Brugia. I was only looking for the opportunity to gift it to you, boy.
Owen pried his gaze away from the dazzling pieces and stared at the king in confusion. This was no ordinary Wiser set. It was one meant for a king. Severn's eyes were full of meaning.
It is my gift to you, Owen. When I make a promise, I honor it. And I expect the same in return.
The children in the room shuffled forward to look at the expensive, custom-made pieces. Even Dunsworth stared at it hungrily. It was clear he had never been favored by the king before. Owen felt a guilty smile tug at the corner of his mouth.
Let's play,
Evie gasped, her interest in the game miraculously renewed.
Ratcliffe is shrewd. He doesn't believe the boy is fountain blessed at all. It's too suspicious, too convenient. He is on the hunt, like a wolf searching for a promising scent. I think he wants to destroy the boy. There is anger in his eyes. If the poisoner isn't careful, the lad might end up like the prince's. Wasn't it the last head of the Espeon who had the two boys murdered?
Dominic Mancini, Espeon of the Palace Kitchen. Chapter 24. Lord Dunsworth. The novelty of the new Wiser set had galvanized the kitchen, which was almost as bustling as it had been the day Owen had predicted the fall of House Asilomar. The Wiser set was pristine, polished to a glassy shine, and each piece was thick and handcrafted. Owen's satchel remained undisturbed while the king's gift dominated. Owen was careful as he showed Evie some of the strategies Anchorette had taught him. It wasn't fun playing someone who could be defeated so easily, but she was more eager to learn with a new set, and she had found new relish in the idea of defeating adults in a game meant for them.
How did you learn all of these moves?
She asked him in wonderment, and Owen felt the wriggling moth of the secret in his chest again. His lips burned to tell her, but he remained silent.
I've always loved Wiser,
he said, completing a series of movements to win the game.
Do you know why they call the game Wiser?
She asked, as they both began to settle the pieces back to the starting position. He nodded and quickly explained the origin of the term.
I wish Myrdin was real, she said with a sigh. Some people say it's just a story. There aren't any true Wisers anymore. But I like to imagine that Wisers are real, that the fountain truly can bless people with magic. There are so many stories, some of them must be true. Like with you, she said slyly.
They stared at the board and started another game.
Your Highness, so lovely to see you, Leona said.
Her voice was one of many in the background, but Owen had a specially cunning hearing. He jerked his head up and saw Princess Elise speaking softly to Leona. He had not spoken to her in a while, and his heart sighed wistfully, remembering how gently she had welcomed him to the palace. He felt tenderness toward her and hoped she would stop to greet him.
Why are you staring at her?
Evie asked with a taunting voice.
She's so beautiful. I wish my hair was gold like hers, not dark as wood. She's very lovely, Owen. You should admire her. She's 10 years older than us, and she still doesn't have a husband. I pity her, truly. Her last betrothed was killed at Ambion Hill by the king. Did you know that? My grandpapa told me about it. He led the vanguard.
At her words, Owen felt worry and regret. Perhaps Anchorette was right, and Evie would not be able to keep a secret from her grandfather. Maybe it was not fair to ask it of her. She was oblivious to his inner turmoil.
There was fighting and arrows and crossbows. I wish I could have been there. I would love to learn how to fight, but they will not let ladies into the training yard. When you learn how to fight, you must promise to teach me. The king remained on the hill, watching as Grandpapa was losing the battle down below. Then he saw his enemy cross the field unguarded, so the king took his household knights and they charged them. The king himself! I wish I had been there. They slammed into the rebels' men, and the king took down the standard-bearer with his own lance. His horse was cut down beneath him, but still he fought, surrounded only by his most loyal knights, and he struck down his enemy with his own sword. After he fell, the battle ended. There was no one left to fight for.
She sighed, fidgeting with a particular piece of the set.
"Are you afraid of going into battle?" she asked him.
Owen looked at her, perplexed. "I'm too young."
"Not now, silly boy, when you are older. You start training when you are 10. It's hard work, but I know I would love it. Like the Maid of Domremy at the Siege of Lyon. When King Severn was young, he was sent to his uncle's castle in the north to be trained in war."
She gave him an eager look.
"Maybe the king will send you to the north. Wouldn't that be wonderful, Owen Kiskaden? Then we could have all the adventures we've talked about. Maybe Grandpapa would let me train, too. Or you and I could do it in secret. It would be just like a dream."
She sighed contentedly. Owen heard the sound of someone sitting on the bench next to them and felt the shadow spread over him. He smelled her. Anchorette. The scent like a rose pressed into the pages of a book. He glanced surreptitiously at her, feeling his stomach wriggling again. There were so many people around. Elizabeth Victoria Mortimer lifted her head at the newcomer. She was completely unafraid of meeting new people, and it didn't bother her in the least that an adult had come so close to their game.
"Hello," she said with a bright smile. "I'm Elizabeth Victoria Mortimer."
"What a lovely name," Anchorette said, returning the smile. "Please, don't let me disturb your game."
"We weren't playing exactly," Evie replied confidentially. "Owen is teaching me how to win. He's very clever. Do you know who this is? He's Owen Kiskaden, the king's ward. He's my friend."
Her eyes crinkled as she reached out and squeezed Owen's hand.
"I can tell you are very close,"
Anchorette said, her smile warm and inviting.
"What is your name?" Evie asked.
Owen swallowed, wondering what the reply would be. His stomach was churning with the newness of the situation. Anchorette had never come down into the kitchen before when others were around. It made him worry for her safety.
"How thoughtful of you to ask," Anchorette said with a winning smile. "I used to come here often, back when the Queen Dowager lived in the palace. There were always so many children running about back then. They had a large brood."
Evie nodded.
"She lives in the sanctuary of Our Lady now. How sad it must be to go from being a queen to being a prisoner in a sanctuary. My grandpapa says she is never going to come out. My grandpapa is Duke Horwath. Do you know him?"
"I do," Anchorette answered. "You must love him a great deal."
She nodded vigorously.
"Oh, yes. He is dear to my heart. I love my grandpapa, but he brought me here to King Fountain to meet Owen."
She patted his leg.
"We're going to be married, you know. He's fountain blessed."
"So I've heard," Anchorette said smugly.
"You best play your game. I'm sorry to have bothered you." "I love playing wiser myself." "Would you like to play with us?" Evie said. "What was your name again? I thought you had told me, but then I realized you hadn't. You're very pretty. I like how your hair is done up like that. It's so beautiful. Mine isn't long enough yet, but when I'm older, I will wear it like yours. What was your name?"
Another sound reached Owen's ears, one that caused a jolt of alarm. It was Dunsdworth's voice, and from the tone, he had come looking for trouble. Owen glanced at the door as the older boy came swaggering into the kitchen, disdainful of the crowds, and began elbowing his way over to the very corner where they sat. Anchorette's face went white.
"I must go," she whispered softly.
Rising from the bench, she started away from them and headed toward the bread ovens. It was all happening so quickly, Owen could only take note of his own alarm and hers before Dunsdworth came close enough to see her. As the older boy gazed upon Anchorette, his expression altered into recognition.
"You?"
Dunsdworth said in shock and surprise. Anchorette took advantage of the commotion to try and slip away, but the boy barged through the crowd and cut her off.
"I think he knows her,"
Evie said with concern. She rose, a frown forming on her lips.
"Who was she?"
Dunsdworth's face was livid with rage.
You're alive? But how can this be? What trickery?"
So Dunsdworth knew Anchorette Trelawney. He recognized her. The dread thickened inside Owen, almost choking him.
"I'm afraid you're confused,"
Anchorette said softly, trying to escape, but the young man barred her way and reached out to grab her arm. She deftly avoided the hand, retreating deeper into the kitchen. Owen knew she could easily best Dunsdworth, but this was not a contest of skill. Too much attention had already been directed at them. If Anchorette were caught, Owen had no doubt she would be killed. It was his fault she had come down into the kitchen at all. He needed to help her. But how? His mind worked furiously to solve the problem. Then he felt a little gush bloom inside him, followed by a flowing sensation, and suddenly his mind was full of ideas. He saw all the possibilities laid out before him, and he acted. He grabbed one of the wiser pieces, jumped over the bench, and rushed toward Dunsdworth. Distract him. Draw him away so Anchorette could escape through the secret door.
"Look what the king gave me!" Owen said loudly.
He rushed up to Dunsdworth and shoved the piece beneath his nose.
"Who cares about your toy?"
Dunsdworth thundered, trying to shove Owen out of his way. Owen thrust the piece into his face again.
"It's not a toy, it's the king's gift. You probably don't even know how to play wiser."
The rebuke was enough to wrest Dunsdworth's attention away from Anchorette.
"Why would I care to play that silly game? Life is not like wiser. Two pieces of stone aren't two men, one trained more than the other."
He yanked the piece out of Owen's hand and gave him a rough shove.
"That's mine!"
Owen shouted with pretended rage.
"You're jealous because the king gave me a gift and he only teases you. Give it back!"
Owen grabbed Dunsdworth's belt and yanked it hard to try and propel himself upward. As he yanked, his fingers began to deftly loosen the belt buckle.
"It's mine! Give it back!"
Evie shouted angrily. She had rushed up to them and was standing nearby, her fists clenched and her cheeks pale with anger.
"It's Owen's!"
"Get off!"
Dunsdworth barked. He waved the piece over his head with one hand and gave Owen a hard shove with the other, sending him crashing to the ground. With Dunsdworth's belt. Without the belt, Dunsdworth's pants dropped down to his ankles, revealing his linen brays, which were hitched up high. There was a spattering of laughter throughout the kitchen, but it was the tittering of the ladies that made the lad's face turn purple. Owen's arm hurt from landing on the hard tiles, but his plan had worked, and Anchorette had used the commotion to slip away. Suddenly, Dunsdworth's purple face twisted with wrath and revenge. He threw down the piece and leaped on top of Owen. Snatching his belt, he started to thrash the smaller boy with vigor. The explosion of pain made Owen gasp in shock and roll into a ball like a tickle bug.
"Stop it! Stop it!"
Evie shrieked, launching herself at Dunsdworth like a cat. She yanked his hair and clawed at him in a frenzy. Freed from the onslaught for a moment, Owen could only look on in awe, surprised at how the girl had turned into a fury. To protect himself, Dunsworth shoved her away too, sending her sprawling, which caused the witnesses to gasp. Owen, curled up on the floor, saw his opening. Without even rising, he kicked out his foot and caught Dunsworth in his most sensitive area. The purple, angry face went milk white as the young man tottered over, clutching himself and whimpering. And it was in that precise moment, as Elizabeth Victoria Mortimer was about to hurl herself at the older boy again in rage and eat his heart, that her grandfather, Duke Horwath, stormed into the kitchen. He saw his little girl on the floor, her face wet with tears of fury. He saw Dunsworth with no pants, and he saw Owen curled up like a beaten pup. The Duke was not gentle as he hauled the young man to his feet and nearly threw him out of the kitchen ahead of him. Owen almost pitied the condemned, but then his body began to tremble with all the pent-up fear, pain, and shame of the last moments. He didn't feel the cut on his cheekbone from the belt buckle until Evie was kneeling in front of him worriedly. She was so angry she was sobbing.
"Are you all right?"
she pleaded, using the hem of her dress to mop the blood from his cheek. He glanced at the doorway from which the Duke had left with Dunsworth, and he saw Mancini slip back into the kitchen, a satisfied smile playing on his flabby mouth. The espion gazed down at Owen on the floor and gave him a little nod of respect. Owen returned the gesture.
"I'll be all right,"
he groaned, clutching his stomach, making his injuries look worse than they really were. Together, he and Mancini had helped save Anchorette. Something had shifted between them. It was as if they now shared an alliance of self-preservation. Owen let Evie nurse him. And in a moment, the Princess Elise was kneeling by him as well.
"Well done," she whispered in his ear.
Her praise was worth the pain. Chapter 25 Secrets of Wine. Anchorette came to Owen's room that night, much to his surprise. After dark, he tracked the passing hours by how low his candle burned. It was still high and bright when the hidden door opened and she emerged, soundless as a shadow. He would not have left to seek her for some time.
"Anchorette," he whispered, rising from the floor where he had spread his wiser board.
He had been playing with the pieces while he waited.
"There's a little cut on your cheek,"
she said, with a wrinkle in her brow. He nodded.
"Leona put some goose grease on it. It doesn't sting that much."
She knelt in front of him so that their eyes were level. As he stood before her, she reached out and smoothed the hair on his forehead.
"You saved me this afternoon, Owen Kiskaden. Despite all our plans, things happen that surprise us."
She paused, giving him such a serious and tender look that he flushed. She placed her hand on his shoulder and gave it a squeeze.
"Thank you, Owen. I'm so grateful."
He swallowed, feeling his ears burn pink.
"You're helping me. I had to help you."
She then took his hands in hers and kissed them before letting them go.
"Bless you for it. Thank you. Now come with me. It's early still. Part of the castle is still awake. I know, we're not going to the tower. We're going to Elizabeth's room."
Owen stared at her in shock.
"You mean, we're going to tell her?" he asked excitedly.
Anchorette gave him a knowing nod.
"When I met her in the kitchen, I studied her closely. I believe she is trustworthy. Now we'll prove if I'm right. Better to know sooner than later. Come with me."
She rose and held out her hand, which he gratefully took. He was used to walking the secret corridors alone, but going with her added a secret pleasure.
"What will you tell her?"
he asked in a whisper, knowing that voices could carry.
"You'll see," she replied softly, squeezing his hand. "She talks a lot, Anchorette.
She talks so much. She's chatty. Are you sure?
Yes, she's loquacious. That's the proper word. But I like that about her. When I saw what she did after Dunsworth's boy started flogging you, how she attacked him like a cat, that earned her my respect. You want someone like her on your side. And how you tricked him out of his pants?
Oh, Owen, you've made an enemy for life. I hope you realize that.
But he and his family have been my enemies for years. I will tell you of it tonight, with her to hear the story.
When they reached the secret door leading to Evie's room, they paused. Anchorette secretly slid open the spy hole and gazed into the room. Candlelight streamed into the corridor from the interior of the room. And the light exposed Anchorette's luminous eyes and the skin of her cheeks. She looked so hauntingly pretty at that moment, and Owen felt lucky to know her.
"She's still awake. Good,"
Anchorette whispered. She slid the spy hole shut and then crouched by Owen so she could whisper into his ear. Her breath tickled him. She had the scent of roses about her still.
"You go in first and tell her that you'd like her to meet a secret friend, someone who has been trying to help you. Tell her you are about to entrust her with your greatest secret. I'll listen and see what she says. Can you remember that?"
"Yes,"
Owen whispered. He was so excited to finally tell Evie the truth that he nearly barged into the room. Anchorette released the hidden latch, and Owen pushed the door open and slipped inside the room. He left the hidden door ajar.
"How did you get in here?"
Evie gasped. She was kneeling on her bed in her nightgown, brushing her dark hair. She scooted off the bed, her eyes gleaming with surprise.
"Is that a secret door? Have you come in here before? Why didn't you tell me?"
"Shh," Owen insisted, holding up his hands to try and stop the flow of questions. He put his finger to his own lips to show her she needed to be quiet. She was almost bouncing with excitement, her eyes glittering.
"Tell me,"
she said, her hands flapping.
"I want to. Shh, someone will hear us. I want to tell you my greatest secret. But first I need to know I can trust you not to tell."
She looked at him with exasperation.
"Of course, you can trust me. I haven't told anyone about the cistern. Do you think Grandpapa would like to know that? There are some things you just don't tell adults. What is it? I'm about to burst."
She gripped his arms and shook him just a little.
"Quiet," he said urgently. "I want you to meet someone. A friend. Someone who is trying to help me escape."
"Why do you need to escape?" she asked.
"Because I don't want to get pushed off a waterfall like my older brother,"
Owen said, getting frustrated.
"Look, will you keep this a secret? If I can't tell you..."
"Of course I will," she said indignantly. "I would never betray you, Owen Kiskaden. Never." She put her finger on her brow, thinking hard.
You can cut off all my hair if I do."
The thought of her bald made him giggle, but then her eyes widened with surprise as she looked over his shoulder. Anchorette had come into the room.
"The lady from the kitchen,"
she whispered in awe. Anchorette came and sat on the edge of Evie's bed. The soft candlelight highlighted her silk gown and perfectly coiffed hair. She looked like such a fairy creature that Elizabeth's mouth formed a lovely O as she stared at her. For the first time, Owen noticed there were some similarities between them. The color of their hair and their eyes almost matched. If Elizabeth Victoria Mortimer grew up looking like Anchorette Trelawney, he would have no problem marrying her.
"I'm pleased to meet you again, my lady,"
Anchorette said, bowing her head respectfully.
"Owen tells me you are Elizabeth Victoria Mortimer, daughter of Lord Mortimer and granddaughter of Lord Horwath. You have esteemed parentage."
A small smile came to Evie's face.
"Who are you?"
she asked, looking intrigued but also a little wary.
"My name is Anchorette Trelawney. I am the Queen's poisoner."
If possible, the girl's eyes seemed to light up even more.
Truly? That is so interesting. You make poisons? But you said you're the queen's poisoner. The queen died. Did you poison her?
Anchorette suppressed a smile.
I served a different queen than King Severn's wife. And no, I did not poison her. She died from a sickness. I have been teaching Owen Kiskaden many things, but most importantly, how to become fountain-blessed. I am fountain-blessed.
You are?
She asked eagerly, even more involved if that were possible. Owen was so grateful that he did not have to carry the burden of the secret alone.
I am. Owen is very special to me. I know he is to you as well. I don't want the king to hurt him or his family if I can help it. I came here tonight to tell you both a story.
Owen wanted so much to tell you about me. He's been pleading with me to trust you. So I came by the kitchen today to see if I dared. When you defended your friend against a much bigger boy, I knew that I could give you my confidence.
Evie smiled with self-satisfaction.
Grandpapa said I should leave flogging to him, but I couldn't stand by while Dunsworth beat Owen with a belt. Did you see what it did to his cheek? It wasn't Owen's fault his pants fell down.
Anchorette suppressed a smile as she gave Owen a pointed look.
Actually, it was, Owen admitted.
Evie covered her mouth, stifling a laugh.
You are wicked, she said, laughing softly. He deserved it.
She turned her gaze on Anchorette.
If you are trying to help Owen, then I want to help too.
I thought you would,
Anchorette replied sagely.
So I must tell you both a story. It is a secret that very few know about, but even though it's a secret, it is still true. Why don't you both sit on the floor and listen? It is the story of how I died.
Owen's eyes widened. He sat on the floor next to Evie, his knees touching hers. His companion was so eager to hear the story, she was fidgeting slightly. Owen felt just as anxious, but for a different reason. He was concerned by the ominous beginning.
This is a story about four brothers, Anchorette said simply. Three of them are dead now. Only the youngest has survived. He is the last of the brothers. His name is Severn. He is your king.
She folded her hands in her lap, bending closer so she could speak more softly.
The eldest brother was Eridur.
His father and the next eldest brother died rebelling against their king. That happens a lot in Ceredigion, and this was many years ago. Eridur was tall, strong, and handsome. The people liked him. With his uncle Warwick's help, he defeated the king and claimed the crown. While the war was still raging, he sent his two youngest brothers to live across the sea in the kingdom of Brugia. Severn was 8 years old when that happened. He was your age, Owen. His father had just died in a terrible battle, just like yours did, my lady. He was very sad. Evie nodded, her countenance darkening, betraying the pent-up grief she felt over her loss. Owen looked at her, surprised. He reached over and covered her hand with his. She smiled at him, but there were tears in her eyes.
King Eridur began to establish himself in the realm. His uncle Warwick, the one who had helped him gain the throne, was his chief supporter, and he ran the king's network of espion. I was very young back then, 16. I was a servant in Warwick's household, but I was part of the espion. I served his eldest daughter, Isabel. We were very close. But as often happens in families, the king and his uncle grew angry with each other. The uncle didn't get his way when he thought that he should have. There was a misunderstanding about the king's marriage. And so Warwick decided to topple the king.
He had his daughter, my mistress, Isabel, marry the king's younger brother, Lord Dunsworth. And he promised his son-in-law the kingdom of Ceredigion.
My loyalty was to the king, not to the uncle. When I learned of his plot, I tried to warn the king of his brother's treachery, but I was too late to save him. He was captured and almost thrown into the river. The uncle should have done away with him. The decision cost him his life later.
Owen swallowed, keenly listening to the story unfold. He was too young to understand the ways of kings and kingmakers. He didn't know any of this history.
Anchorette continued. King Eridur escaped his confinement and fled across the sea to Brugia with his youngest brother, Severn. They were in exile, living on the grace of others. After biding his time, Eridur returned with a trick he had learned from one of his ancestors.
What trick?
Evie asked with keen interest. The trick was this. He returned and went to the north. Rather than reclaim his crown, he said he merely wanted to be Duke of Northumbria again. Your grandfather's role, my dear. It surprised everyone, and the uncle was furious, of course. Very quickly, King Eridur gathered enough supporters to fight his uncle. Warwick and Lord Dunsworth fled Ceredigion soon after. What a turn of events! King Eridur wasn't secure, though. His enemies were abroad, causing trouble. And so the uncle made an alliance with the wife of the king he had helped Eridur depose, promising to restore that king to power. It was a cowardly act. To preserve his own power, he forsook his entire family. How do you think his son-in-law, Lord Dunsworth, felt about that? And here is where my part comes in.
Owen and Evie looked at each other.
King Eridur sent me on a secret mission. I was very young, not even 18 years old. He sent me across the sea to find Lord Dunsworth. The king asked me to persuade the younger man to relent and join forces with his king and brother. If I could not persuade him, the king ordered me to poison him. That was my first assignment as the royal poisoner. It was a difficult thing to do.
She bowed her head, breathing softly. Then she looked up at both of the children.
But I succeeded. I had the badge of Warwick's house still, so I was able to infiltrate my way to Lord Dunsworth. I persuaded him to rejoin his family loyalty. When the uncle returned to Ceredigion with a huge army, he was shocked to learn that his son-in-law had betrayed him and joined his forces with King Eridur's. The uncle fought in a battle and was killed. The brothers were reconciled. For a time. I still worked for Lord Dunsworth's wife after that, Anchorette said, to keep an eye on the brother and make sure he remained loyal. During that time, the brother grew more and more upset that he was not going to become the king his ambition demanded he be. He did some things in his own household that were terrible. He was not a gentle man. He beat his wife and his son. But then he learned something. He learned from rumors, from men who fed his itching ears, that King Eridur had married someone before wedding his queen. If that were true, then all the king's children were bastards, and he, Lord Dunsworth, would be in line to be the next king. You can imagine how the bad blood between the brothers grew after this. I do not know whether the rumors were true or not. Dunsworth believed they were. He began plotting his own rebellion.
She stopped, rubbing a hand along her arm, and shook her head.
This part is difficult to talk about. Only the queen in the sanctuary of Our Lady knows the whole story.
She sighed.
The king, fearing another rebellion, ordered me to poison his brother.
Owen stared at her. It was so quiet in the room they could hear her every breath.
It was not the only time the king had asked me to act against his enemies. I knew by then that attempting to reason with Lord Dunsworth would be a waste of breath, He was so ambitious, so determined to take the throne for himself. When I began to prepare myself to finish this hard task, I poisoned his cup of wine, knowing that he loved to drink it.